Good morning. It is 7:43 here on the Mighty 690. Time to start out our green setup program brought to you by Green Acres here in Coffeyville. Joining us, we have livestock production agent Wendy Powell, crop agent James Coor. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
All right. Well, Wendy, I know that you have a few events that you'd like to talk about here before we get into today's topic. So, of course, fair season is at hand.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, so we've got several fairs starting in the next few days. The LeBec County Fair starts July 18th and runs through the 25th. The Montgomery County Fair, right there in Independence, runs the 22nd through the 27th. And then the Wilson County Fair, held in Fredonia, runs July 21st through the 26th. And then the next week, we have the Crawford County Fair, the 29th through August 1st. And then, of course, we've got the Interstate Fair and Rodeo coming up here in Coffeyville, August 9th through the 15th.
Very good. So it's going to be a busy time.
Absolutely, yes. And right in that mix, too, we're going to have a mortality management workshop held on the 29th in Parsons. We're actually going to demonstrate a shallow burial method. This is an innovative method dealing with livestock carcasses, livestock mortalities only. We're going to be dealing with those carcasses in a manner that's a little bit different than what we've traditionally held, and just demonstrating that for folks to come out and take a look at that. And we're going to be monitoring that soil temperature and soil moisture for a year afterwards to see how those carcasses break down as well. So it'll be a really interesting program on July 29th there at Parsons. It starts at 8:30 in the morning.
Very good. So is there any registration that folks need to do for that?
We are going to be providing lunch, so I would like a registration for lunch numbers, but not necessarily for the program.
Okay, very
so,
good.
Yeah, as soon as you can, if you have it fit in your calendar, go ahead and call in or check our Facebook pages or our website for the registration link.
All right. Well, as we are getting into some of these county fairs, it is a good reminder. Of course, we want to make sure all our livestock and everything are safe for that. And there are some things that people do need to know when it comes to handling and you know, just taking care of those livestock. So what do you want us to note here today, Wendy, as we get into fair season?
Absolutely. So I thought this would be a good thing to talk about, especially with all of the buzz with New World screwworm and everything that goes into handling livestock and commingling and transporting and just good biosecurity practices whenever it comes to handling livestock and fairs and exhibitions of these sorts. So really, the fair organizers, the organizers of the whole programs, are responsible for providing for the safety of those critters and all of the critters going home safely as well. So there's lots of rules in place for animals crossing state lines. Of course, our county fairs, those animals are not crossing state lines necessarily, but whenever it comes to the Coffeyville Fair, of course, there are going to be several. But whenever we cross state lines, they have to have a certificate of veterinary inspection, commonly called a health paper. And really, it's just that a vet, accredited veterinarian, has looked at those animals and determined that, yes, they are healthy. They're free of ringworm. They're not coughing. They don't have any weird fungal things going on. No scrapies, sores in the mouth. Rings around the hoof to make for sure that those animals are safe to be around other animals. There's a lot of show animals that have a lot of dollars poured into them, and so it's kind of a scary thing to be commingled at a fair. You don't want your high-dollar animal that you've worked with all summer to come home with some condition that could put them in pain and cost a lot of money. So that's the reason that we do all of these things. So if an animal is not crossing a state line, what are we doing? All of our local fairs have protocols in place. So either a veterinarian is on site looking at those animals as they come off of the trailer or before they unload, really. That way, if something is found, that the animal doesn't even get unloaded. Or there's trained professionals at the fairs that will look at the animals and say, okay, yes, they are safe to be commingled with these other animals. We're not going to have any problems with vesicular stomatitis virus or rabbit hemorrhagic disease, things like that. In the case of flare-ups of specific diseases. A few years ago, we dealt with the vesicular stomatitis virus in horses, VSV. We will have more stringent policies in place. So that means that there will be a vet on hand to look at all of the animals in their mouth more specifically. So I think folks should just keep in mind that whenever you're bringing these high-dollar, highly trained animals into these locations, that we are keeping a close eye on biosecurity and making for sure that our animals are going to stay safe.
Now, how often, for those health papers you talked about for crossing state lines, you know, how many days are we looking at that those are, like, valid for?
Sure, that's a great question. 30 days. For the most part. And most of the time, a vet will work with producers to come on site to the producer's farm or have a specific location where you don't necessarily have to bring those animals into town to the vet's office every time that you need a new health paper every 30 days. So just know that it's not as painful a process as it kind of might sound like. Just work with your veterinarian specifically.
And this looks like it'd be more of a thing for the Interstate Fair and Rodeo, but if someone does bring any lactating dairy cattle, it looks like there is a test that has to be done for that.
Yes, absolutely. So any producing dairy cows have to be tested to make for sure that their milk is going to be safe. The HPAI milk test, which is the avian influenza disease that we deal with in poultry a lot, is something that we have to keep in mind. And really, that's just a movement situation. We're not really keeping any milk from the fair like we used to. So that milk is just usually fed to a calf that comes with the dairy cow or is dumped. So it's not necessarily going to be put into production anyways, but they do have to have that that negative milk test done before they can cross state lines.
Sure. We're speaking with Wendy Powell here, K-State Extension. And on the poultry side of things, I haven't heard a lot about avian influenza this year. I mean, we've had it really bad in past years. Have you heard any word on how that disease is this go around?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a it's a really big concern during migration times, whenever the wild fowl is migrating. So right now, we don't have to worry about it quite so much. But we have had some influxes in the northern states this last spring. Hopefully, we've gotten a handle on that. This specific strain that we've been dealing with for the past 3 to 4 years has seemed to really hold on a lot longer than like what happened in 2015. That was a more 1 year episode, and this one seems to be lasting a lot longer. But hopefully we're on the tail end of that and we're getting a handle on those wildlife populations as well. So for our poultry, another disease of concern that we have with them is pylorum and typhoid. And so in Kansas, we test at county fairs every 4 years. All of the birds have to come in several days before the fair and have a blood test done. And we test for pylorum to make for sure these birds are safe, unless the veterinarian works with the breeder beforehand and they have a certificate of veterinary inspection. That's another process. So we make for sure that all of our birds are safe in that regard. So coming to the county fair this year for the Wildcat District, which is Wilson, Labette, Montgomery, and Crawford counties, they do not have to have that blood test done. But if they're going to go to the state fair or if they're going to go on to any other exhibitions beyond our county fairs, they'll need to check the rules.
Very good. Now, any other highlights here from some of those other animals here as we get into state fair time?
With small ruminants, sheep and goats, we always want to make for sure that they're free of scrapies, which is a disease of the skin. This is designated with a tag. All animals coming from a scrapies-free flock or herd gets a tag, and that comes out of KDA, Kansas Department of Agriculture, and you have a premise ID and all of the rules and regulations that go with that. So any of those critters will have those scrapies tags, and those you'll have to look at the rules on the fair, but those tend to be also good tags for the fair, so you don't necessarily have to have a fair tag as well. So making for sure that your animals are safe coming out of the farm. Don't bring them if they do have any of these signs, just because you don't necessarily want to infect your trailers, any of your equipment, any of the animals you're going to be stalling next to, you'd be putting at risk. So if you're seeing ringworm, warts, any sort of unknown lesion, just keep those critters at home. Care for them at home and don't put anybody else at risk.
It's a good reminder as well. And then, of course, I know as we are getting in and getting those animals situated, each fair is going to have different rules regarding, you know, what you can do to your pens, you know, fans and that sort of thing. I know in years past, there's been some unfortunate things happen, especially with those goats that like to chew on wire.
Yes. Yes. So that's definitely something. Look at the rules, but also use some common sense. Yeah. So you want to, our fairs are hot. I mean, those barns can be kind of stifling sometimes with no air movement. So a lot of folks will bring in fans. Whenever you're planning to bring in a fan, make for sure you have a strategy for making sure that fan is up out of the reach of the animal. Goats will climb, sheep will kind of stand on the panels as well and reach those. It's interesting, it's new. If they haven't seen them on the farm, then what is this apparatus that's now making me cool, right? So they'll be curious. Keep those fans up. I know at the Independence Fair, there's rules in place about having a non-conductive material that those fans are attached to. So you have to have, like PVC pipe, or I'm not that kind of engineering-minded person, but you have to make for sure that there's no wires attached to the fan and that the electric cords are out of the way, and you can't have the fan behind the animal in the walking space of the public. So there are very specific rules that you have to follow to keep those animals safe, because, electrocutions do happen, and it's kind of a horror story from a fair. So we want to make for sure that that doesn't happen this year.
That's right. Zip ties are a friend there.
Yes.
So as we wrap up this segment here, any other guidelines here as we go about county fair time from an animal side?
Use common sense. If your critter's too crazy to go to the county fair, leave it at home. So, and then just keep an eye on the health. Whenever you get to the fair, it's a very stressful time. It's hot. If the animal hasn't ever really been off the farm, it's a whole new atmosphere, loud, lots of people, lots of animals. I was around a bucket calf recently that had never seen a pig. At the wash rack, we were in the wash rack taking care of the bucket calf, and a pig came in from the other side, and she was quite astounded that there was a critter that was shorter than her, which was kind of fun to watch. But just know that your animals are going to be exposed to a lot of noise, sights, sounds, colors. You're going to have to walk from the trailer to the stall, from the stall to the wash rack. Feeding is different. Make for sure that you're prepared for that new atmosphere of stress for those animals.
Very good. Well, we do have good reminders on that. And as we continue along, we've got our next segment, James Cooper, joining us. And James, what do you want to talk about next segment?
So we're probably going to talk about upcoming diseases when it comes to corn and, you know, the soybeans and kind of what they look like. I do want to talk about some fall armyworms. It's going to easily could be an issue in our young soybeans. And so I definitely want to hit that. I do have some more notes to talk about, like some ancient grains and some other fun stuff, but I don't know if we'll have time. The fall armyworms is a pretty important topic. We'll see if we get time after that.
All right, very good. Well, Wendy, if folks do want to get a hold of you here, any questions about preparing for our county fairs, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, call me at the Altamont Extension office, 620-784-5337, or reach out to any of our other offices.
All right, very good. And we have on the way more on our Green Setup program brought to you by Green Acres coming up here in just a few minutes. And then we are going to be getting in a check of open line here at 8:40, and then back to an update from the Coffeyville Chamber. That'll be at 9:10 here on the Mighty 690.
All right, good morning, Wendy and James. How are you guys today?
How are you?
Very good.
Good. All right. So we have James Cooper here today. So I've been looking at some crop, the crop progress report the past week. Do you want to tell us a little bit how soybeans and corns are doing, or corn is doing right now?
Yeah. So our corn's doing pretty good, really. I mean, it's drying down, even the late planted corn. I mean, it's already past milk stage, getting to blisters. I mean, blister getting to milk even farther along than that. So I think our corn's pretty much set, honestly, which as much rain as we had, even though it hasn't rained in a couple weeks down the south end, but still it should fill out and look pretty good. I'm hoping to do some yield contests this year, farmers, yeah. if you're out there, because we're going to have some nice yields. I really like that. The wheat, of course, was harvested late. You know, that is what it is. But the soybeans, I'm still seeing planters going around. Today is actually the last day for the insurance. And so I'm sure planters are going to be running today, and then we shouldn't see them after this. But still, you know, a lot of little tiny soybeans, I mean, we're late this year, but we were last year too, so.
Well, my dad says it's some of the best corn he's ever seen since he, like, I mean, yeah, we got talking the other day. It kind of looks like corn from the ice states for how, like, tall it is.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, there will be some blank spots in the fields. And I know that farmers, when they get in their combine, they're driving along, like, well, there's a wet spot. There's not going to be nothing there. And that's going to take down the average yield. But for the fields with good drainage, there's going to be some big areas with really nice yields. So it's going to be up and down, but I'm expecting to see some really way better than average anyway. Yes.
So next topic, we have fall armyworms you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, today I kind of thought we would talk about, you know, some of the insects. This is really the prime time to have some insect issues, really when it gets hot outside. Insect pressure increases, and that's for two reasons. Not only is it because insect populations actually increase because of their generations, but also because, you know, it's also because everything's starting to go down in growth. And so because there's less growth, the insects end up having a larger aspect. So today I kind of want to talk about the first thing was corn leafhoppers, talk a little bit about southern corn rust, which is actually a disease, but it's a little important. And then finally talk about fall armyworms. Fall armyworms is the big one. So first, corn leafhoppers, these little green bugs. They're little tiny guys. They're pretty cute. They're like, I don't know, a fourth of an inch. But they hop up from Texas, and they get to Oklahoma, and they finally get into Kansas. But the problem with these little things is that they carry corn stunt spiral plasma, and it's a corn disease. And this corn disease is sort of one of the up-and-coming diseases that we've been looking at. It's coming from, you know, even farther south than Texas. But, you know, now that it's here, we've been keeping an eye on it. Are those little corn leaf hoppers getting far enough, north enough, fast enough for us to have an issue? So far, the answer is no. We have caught a few of them in Kansas just in the last past couple of weeks. Do they have positive spiroplasm? We're not sure yet. But, you know, if they get here earlier, I mean, like if they get here in May, and they're carrying that disease. Mm-hmm. Now, to carry that disease, they have to feed on an infected plant and within one life frame get to another plant. So it's not the most transmittable disease as comparison to some of our others, but it can definitely, I mean, last year we had a lot more of them. And the year before that, we had some too. So this could be a disease where we'll see some outbreaks from year to year. Fortunately, our corn's already too far along. We don't need to worry about it. The same thing with corn southern rust. Now, this is not an insect. It's a fungus, like all rust. And it does come up from the south, like rust does. It likes warm weather. So 75, 85, 90 degrees, it's doing just fine. Most rust do not like that. They turn off. But they also likes humidity. And it's been plenty humid, right? Especially in the Neosho Crawford, they had that one last rain event. Yeah. And so they're even more humid, which is why it's popping up all over. They've positively identified it all over the Missouri border right next to us. So I'm sure that we have some here in Kansas. Yeah. And so that corn southern rust, if your corn is late enough, like a lot of the earlier planted corn, probably don't need to worry about it. It started too far along. But if you have a late planted corn, you need to keep an eye out for it. Because once a field has some of this, it can spread insanely fast. It's a very fast disease. So even if you're still in the bluster or milk stage and you have southern rust on your lower leaves, it might be worth a fungicide application.
What does it look like?
It looks like rust.
Yeah, actually. Can you scrape it off?
Yes, you can, but not very well. Like most rust diseases, on both sides of the leaves, and that will kind of help you with some positive identification. And there's some other parts to it to help you differentiate between some of the other diseases, like Goss's blight and some of the other corn diseases. Fortunately, rust is usually, you know, it's like fluffy redness, and it's corn southern rust is a little bit darker. But it's a lot easier to have a side-by-side picture comparison.
Yes.
That way you can see the difference between this rust, because there's a lot of corn diseases out there right now, obviously. Anyway, the main topic, though, is going to be talking about fall armyworms. Last year, we had a big issue with fall armyworms, right, Wendy?
Yes.
Yeah, they were everywhere. I mean, they were in our yards.
I'm going to look these up.
They were in our pastures. They were in our fields, the alfalfa.
Everywhere. I
mean, they were everywhere. And this year has so far, we might see a whole nother year just like it. I've been... Yeah, there you go. Yeah, little worms. They've got green stripes, yellow stripes. Fall armyworms have a Y on their head. And that's how you differentiate them between other armyworms. Except for there's a green-striped armyworm that also has a Y. And so really, it's there's some other dots to help you. There's a couple of different things. But by now, I would not be surprised if you find a fall armyworm. It would not be that hard to find one. Now, I've been catching some in some traps I have at the Parsons Research Center and a little bit farther north, another one, for about a month, I would say. And their life cycle is about a month. So that means the moths have been here for a while, and we might be getting to our second generation in not very long. Usually the first generation, we don't see much of them. But by the second generation, and then by the third, in some years, even a fourth generation, their population is getting huge. And that's the real problem. So the biggest concern, at least in the crop world, is within our young soybeans, our double crop soybeans. Our earlier planted soybeans, you know, the fall armyworms, they prefer to lay their eggs in grasses. And because they did that, they really weren't looking for the soybean fields as much. They might come in from the borders, but the soybeans are already too far along. Not that big of a problem. But the double crop soybeans, if you have a field that was germinated, like, you know, it was harvested late, which most of the wheat was, and then the wheat fell off and some of that wheat germinated, so volunteer wheat, it looks like the perfect place for fall armyworms. So really we had a good condition because we had lots of late harvested volunteer wheat around that was lush, and now we're planting soybeans into it. So they'll hatch in the young wheat and eat that, and then they'll quickly move on to the soybeans because they don't prefer soybeans, but they will not stop at them. So once they get to the soybeans, because they're so young, they can completely take out a field. I mean, I've seen where an entire edge of a field is just completely chewed down to nothing. I mean, they're just little nubs left. And the soybeans can't recover because there's no leaves left to recover from. So it's definitely can be an issue, and it's really something that farmers need to look out for. Now, spraying pesticides preemptively doesn't really do much because you might not catch them in the right spot. And pesticides usually last 2 or 3 weeks. Sometimes, we put insecticide applications in our seed. You know, we have it within the plant itself, systemic ones. Those are marginally effective, but for the most part, that resistant wears off too quickly. And because these worms are bigger, I mean, because they've already fed on the wheat, so they're already a good size, you know, by the time they get to that, they're kind of resistant. So really, catching them in the act is honestly the best way. And if you see a bunch of them out there that are a quarter of an inch, half an inch, that means that they still got a lot of life cycle left in them. Because it's their last stage, their fifth instar, when they're about an inch long to inch and a quarter, that's when they do the most damage. About 70% of their damage is in the last 4 days before they turn into moths. So they start off slow, but then it's instant decimation.
Game over.
Yeah, it's game over at that point. And so controlling them, I mean, of course, is some sort of a pesticide application. And there's a bunch of them. They're not really resistant to anything, especially because they're feeding directly on leaf matter. So if you get a good coverage, you're going to get them too. So, you know, as far as scouting, make sure that you're inspecting different places within your field, especially the field edges. And I mean, that's sort of where they like to hang out the most, but they will be sporadic. And so just because one part of a field you don't see anything does not mean another part of the field isn't going to be completely covered. Mm-hmm. And sometimes this will be, you know, 5, 10, 15 acre patches that can be completely taken out. And so, Wendy, the same is kind of true for Bermuda forages.
Absolutely. What? Any of these hay fields that we're harvesting from and then we expect to get another crop off of even next year, we need to be scouting for these army worms. Absolutely. So one of the methods that I encourage folks to adopt is a wire hanger. You stretch it out to make it more of a square, put that on the ground, count how many army worms are out there, and when you reach the threshold, that's when you need to go ahead and spray. And go ahead and start doing that now. Start scouting. I've always said the best thing you can put in your pasture, and today hayfield and field crops as well, is your shadow. Get out there and look at things.
Yeah. And, you know, they do have certain system or things that you can use to, like, capture something. They got, like, sweep nets. And it was just really looks like a net for moths, honestly. And so you're just sweeping the ground and smacking the little worms into it so you can count them. But really, these worms aren't very elusive. Most of the time, you can actually just see them out there hanging out. Mm-hmm. Usually, the morning-ish or the evening-ish time frame is best. During the hot sun, they'll hide a little bit just because it's so hot outside. But, you know, they're not hard to find. They're on the surface of the leaf. They're not even underneath it. So for the most part, treatment thresholds when it comes to young soybeans is very low. If you're seeing even just a couple per row foot, it's probably worth spraying. And now as they get bigger, that threshold gets larger and larger. By the time, you know, we get to reproductive stages, like if you're earlier planted soybeans or might be getting close to flowering, that treatment threshold gets to 9 or 10 per mm-hmm. per row foot, and that's because we're expecting a lot of beneficials to be out there trying to feed on them as well. We don't want to treat them at a threshold too low and end up creating an issue later on, but with young soybeans you don't have that opportunity for some damage. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to control them because it doesn't take much. The same thing is true for alfalfa. There was a lot of fields really damaged by the fall armyworm and alfalfa last year. And the reason is because, you know, if there's a little bit of grass within the alfalfa, they'll lay their eggs in it, but they sure do like alfalfa. And they're not supposed to, being a grass worm, but that's not what I've seen. I mean, they really seem to like a lot of our broadleaves, and especially the lush ones like that. And so they will spread out really quickly. And of course, there's a lot of other worms out there. I mean, like I mentioned before, the yellow striped worm, the true army worm should still be around. I mean, we've got like web worms. Those are pretty easy to tell because they're mm-hmm. fuzzy, right? They're actually almost like caterpillar. And so there's a bunch of stuff out there. I think it was a few years ago. Yeah, I saw... I've never seen this before, but it was actually the webworm that took out probably 5 to 6 acres of a field. And usually they don't do that. I mean, usually you don't have a big enough a population because it's like a butterfly.
Yeah.
Sometimes outbreaks, even in the secondary species, do happen.
It's just crazy to me, like, how small these creatures are, and they can do so much damage.
They're ferocious eaters. Yes. They just take things out. On the army worms, isn't it the army worms that do the window painting? So if you're looking out there and you see the smaller hole in the leaf tissue that looks like a window pane.
Yes. And so a lot of the worms do that. So a lot of worms, they will start off on their first and second instar. Mm-hmm. They will do window painting, which is basically they'll skeletalize it. They're like sucking the juices out of it. And they can't fully consume a leaf yet. But by their third, fourth, fifth instar, you know, then they're actually chewing holes and then just eating the entire leaf. And their instars, they're moving from one instar to the next within a 3 to 4 day period. So they grow insanely fast, which is why their entire life cycle, I mean, from hatch out of the egg to moth to already laying egg, I mean, it's barely over a month. I mean, that's how fast they're actually moving. And, you know, one... female moth, she'll lay a couple hundred eggs per generation. So if you can imagine just how fast, within 3 or 4 months that we have during the period, I mean, it's great magnitudes from what we started off with to what they can actually end up being. So we really are relying a lot on our beneficials. They do a lot more damage than what we know, but sometimes they can't control it.
When do they turn off? Like, when do we have to stop worrying about armyworms?
Frost. Yeah. So, you know, fall armyworms, they show up later. I mean, usually, I mean, we would like to see them not show up until July or not at all. But they've been showing up earlier. And so early June is sort of what we've been seeing them at. And they do blow in from another area. But yeah, they keep going. In fact, their last generation, a lot of them, of course, they fly away, fly south. But the last generation, we probably end up killing a lot of moths just with our frost, but not near enough to actually stop them. So, you know, they just keep going until they can't go anymore. You know, some of the other worms, like the true army worm, they also have multiple generations. It's earlier because they actually hang out around here. But they sort of go downhill when it gets to the hotter months. Just because, I don't know, their populations just can't quite contain themselves. And it seems like the heat becomes an issue for them. So, yeah.
All right. Do you guys, Wendy or James, do you guys have anything else you guys would like to share with the community or what's going on in the world?
Yeah, I do want to mention that event coming up again, Livestock Mortality Management. We're going to do a demonstration of the shallow burial method on July 29th at the Research Center.
Awesome. James, how about you?
Not only really big events coming up. You know, fair season's about to start, so we got a lot going on.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, going once.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Well, thank you guys for coming out today. We always appreciate you guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Yep, thank you.